Thank you for having me and us. The podcast was fun. The Bad Take Podcast. Yeah.
All right, Rachel.
We can
take us into it.
Okay. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the Bad Take Podcast, the travel podcast where we talk about all the wild, weird, beautiful, sometimes deeply unhinged sides of the world. Today, our episode is going to be what travel really feels like. Today's World Mental Health Day. So it's kind of fitting for the theme. We're going to talk about the highs, the lows, the chaos, and the growth that comes with it all as well. So we're going to share some stories, talk about the mental side of traveling, and probably overshare a little. Maybe we'll see a few tears.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, thank you, Rachel. I definitely told you that I might cry during this episode. Thank you for telling everybody, Rachel.
I'm sorry. But yeah, anyways, so we're going to start with the mental health challenges that travelers face. And we're not talking about people, you know, who are going on vacation, but more the people, I don't know, maybe you've got like a backpacking trip coming up. I know some people travel for like 6 months, 12 months, especially Southeast Asia. I know a lot of people do that from Europe. So we're going to be, this is aimed at people who travel a little bit more long term. And the mental health challenges that you might face or you have faced. And we're just going to give you some tips and advice on maybe things that can help with that. As both of us have been traveling for a while. I mean, I've been traveling continuously for 3 years. So yeah. I can talk from experience.
I've been kind of like, and I want to be honest, since, you know, we're on this topic, for like the last week and a half, I'm not really one of those type of people, you know, to come out and, you know, really talk about feelings. I've been kind of like in a depressive state, you know, and I think that it's because I feel like I'm coming down off of traveling so much and being back in my natural environment, you know, where I'm from, you know, just getting back, not in the old habits, but just seeing the things that, you know, I wanted to get away from. Even though I'm about to leave again, I'm be happy again, but
yeah. I totally understand how you feel. Like, I spent so long trying to get out of my hometown, and then obviously after getting deported from your country, I've ended up back in my hometown, which is like the last place on earth I'd want to be, if I'm being honest. I've been here for 5 months.
Let me ask you, like, finally being back, how did you feel? Like, did you feel some type of like anxiety the first week or first month, second month?
I mean, it's difficult for me because like I spent 4 days being shipped around country through airports and stuff with no sleep. So when I eventually landed, like I felt relief, which I normally wouldn't have felt going back to the UK. But honestly, seeing the first, as soon as I arrived in London, because I'm not from London, but my friend lives there. So she was the first person I seen getting back home. And it was so nice to see her. Like, as soon as I seen her, I was happy again. So, like, it has been nice being back. It's been nice seeing, like, my friends and my family and stuff. But a couple of weeks of that is fine for me, you know? I don't need 5 months being here. So actually being back, and I'm from a small town. And it's kind of like, maybe you can relate to this. When you're gone for a while and you kind of travel the world and you grow and you learn so much and then you come back to the place where you grew up, it's like nothing's changed. Everything's still the same. Everyone's still doing the same shit, moaning about the same shit. Like it's almost like, and I hate saying this because I don't want to sound like I think I'm better than other people, but I feel like I've outgrown my town. So every time I come back here, I feel like I'm taking a step back.
Exactly. And also, like, I think, like, when you're traveling and you're going to these different places, you pick up little attributes and things about these places, you know, and it's like you start to become a different person. You know what I mean? Mm. You start to learn new things about yourself.
You are.
And when you go back to your hometown, it's like people are treating you and talking to you, you know, like as if you're still the old you, even though you've grown.
Exactly. And it's like you can't, it's like you, people can't quite comprehend that you're a different person. Like, even for me, like, my accent is so washed out, I couldn't even tell you, like, what my accent is anymore. But when I come home, every time I come home, people are like, oh, your accent's weird. Oh, you sound... My younger sister told me that I sounded fake. She thought I was faking my voice because I've just, like, adapted to, like, listening to other people speaking English and picking up other accents. And, like, because I teach English, it's like I've had to learn how to pronunciate my words so people can understand me. So, like, my accent's really crazy. Like, anywhere I go, I have an accent. So it's like when I come back home, like, immediately people can see that I'm different. And it's like some people won't be able to understand that you are not the same person as before.
I was thinking about that to myself not too long ago. I was like, you know, doing a lot of traveling. I think when I first went to Virginia, right, for me, that was a defining moment because that was me trying to, you know, recreate myself and get things right. Like, I didn't have nothing in order. And I think when I went down there, it was hard for me because I'm in this new place. I'm all the way down south. I don't know anybody. I'm getting lost everywhere I'm going. You know, it was hard. And I had to rebuild everything from the bottom. So I think, like, sitting in that room on that blow up bed was just like, now I'm making light of it, but sitting in an empty room, you know, in a blow up bed could, like, really do something to your mental. Like, I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, dang, like, should I go back to Philly, or like, what should I do? Like, I remember just sitting there, you know, applying for jobs, and it was like, I don't even know if I should go this deep into detail. You know what? Screw it. I'm gonna throw this out there. So I didn't get my high school diploma until 2021 of May. And that was because I had ended up dropping out of high school because I wanted to chase my dreams when it came to film. So when I had moved to Virginia, I had a job secured. It was locked in. Cool. I had the place. Everything was good. So I remember going through the training. What is it called again? Like, when you're doing compressions on somebody that's having, like, an emergency. Yeah. So I was doing CPR training. And, like, I remember completing that or whatever. And, like, when I went to go finish the last part to get the job, the lady was like, so can I have your high school diplomas or whatever? And I was just thinking in my head, damn, I don't have it. You know, like, I decided to chase my dreams and, you know, not complete that. I had hit a brick point where it was just like, damn, like, where I just laid in the bed and was just like, dang, like, what do I do? And I remember just telling myself, like, you have no right to feel bad for yourself. And I just got up, I mass applied for a bunch of jobs. I ended up landing this one job that put me in the shelter. Working at the shelter. It was the most horrible job I ever worked at in my life. It's horrible. I was doing security and I had to check through homeless people's stuff, you know, make sure I didn't get poked by anything. I was seeing people having overdoses. People was dying, like, because the way it was set up was they had, like, an old bus station lot. And, like, they had, like, tents out there. And, of course, it was summertime. And, like, sometimes, like, when they would go in the morning time, you know, when it was time for breakfast or whatever. Oh, man, this stuff is hard to talk about. Because when I tell you, it was crazy. Like, so, like, in the morning time, like, when they would do roll call for, like, breakfast, you know, some people was, like, you know, they passed away in their sleep. Because when you go to go check their tent, you know, for whoever didn't show up for breakfast. So that job mentally...
Yeah,
it was just heavy. Something else, you know, the job and everything just adding up. But I stuck with it and I got through that hard phase and I got awarded this job with the city and I made more money than I ever made. My credit, you know, went up. So I was able to get, like, couches. I got rid of the blow up bed.
Not wrong with a blow up bed.
Listen, a blow up bed, nobody tells you this because I've had enough blow up beds to know. A blow up bed has a lifespan of about a month before it starts.
Hey, it depends on the quality of the blow up bed. But sometimes if it's not a blow up bed, it's just a mattress on the floor. To be honest.
Like, it'll still blow up, but it's like you'll find yourself overnight, just keep turning it on. Like, you know, you find yourself on the floor or something. So
yeah, because it like deflates throughout the night a little, doesn't it?
How you know? What, you had a blow up bed, Rachel?
I have so many blow up beds. Yeah. I have. I hear what you're saying though. Yeah, I've worked in mental health. I worked in mental health for a long time. And I worked with people with like brain injuries and drug addictions and eating disorders, and it's hard. It's hard to watch, you know. It takes a lot of but it builds resilience. I don't know if I ever told you, because I've been traveling continuously for 3 years. So I don't think I ever told you how I got into traveling full time.
I thought it was the school thing. No.
So 2020 COVID, that year when COVID hit, I was just finishing my master's. So I didn't get like a graduation or anything. I think it was like 3 weeks into COVID. Like in the UK, like we had like a lockdown. I don't know how it was the rest of the world, but you were literally inside. You could go out for literally essentials only and 1 hour of exercise. I think it was like 3 weeks into this lockdown, like me and my long-term partner of 3 years, he came home and told me he cheated on me, right? So now I was going through a breakup during COVID, right? And I've just finished uni. I was working in mental health at the time. So like, I mean, everyone's life got flipped upside down, right? So then me being me and needing, I very much like, I'll get into this, but I use travel as a form of therapy, right? And so me being me, I was like, I can't leave the country because of COVID, but I need to get away. So I just up and moved to London, which is like 6 hours away from where I'm from. I didn't know anyone. I had no friends, like nothing. It was the first time I was moving out of my hometown. This is at 24. So I moved to London, obviously make friends. I was there for 2 years and I'd got into a relationship when I was in London. And this relationship became very, I don't want to say toxic, but it was very much affecting my mental health. Like not even just my mental health, my emotional health, my physical health, my financial health as well, because London's expensive and he was a bum. So I was very much struggling and I was like, I was at a breaking point. And I think during this time, because of COVID and everything happening, like I had a little identity crisis. I'm not even going to lie. Like I was like, who even am I? Like, what do I want? Like, what is my purpose? Like, you know, that kind of thing. I think most people tend to hit that when it gets to around 25, quarter life crisis, they call it. When they started eventually opening up the borders, which I think was around March 2022, I had to leave. I hadn't traveled for 2 years. That's the longest I've been without traveling for as long as I can even remember. I think for as long as I've been alive, if I'm being honest. So I was like, I need to leave. I need to get out of this country. Because of this relationship, what I'd done is we'd broke up and I just moved from London back to my hometown. And that was the first time where I'm like, back in my hometown again, you know? And that's when I wasn't in a good place. So I was like, I've spent so much time trying to get out of this time, running away from
it. Welcome back, Rachel.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm fucking back here again. So that just, even though like a lot of the stress from the relationship and everything was over, like obviously I was still heartbroken, you know? And like I still had loads of debt from this bum. But that kind of added to it, being back in my hometown. So I'm like, right, how can I get out? Because now I've quit my job. So now I don't have a job. Obviously, I had a little bit of savings, but I've got debt. And I'm heartbroken. So that's when I started looking into teaching English abroad. And I got my first like company who would pay for my qualification to do before I went in Poland. And that's how I started. And then from Poland, I found more teaching jobs and I moved around. And then I picked up other kind of jobs, but none of them were like a consistent employer. Do you know what I mean? It was like this for a couple of months, this for a couple of months. And that had me traveling. I did like a ski rep for a while. I've done volunteering where like they would provide my accommodation. And then I would come back to the UK occasionally. In the UK, I would work with children. So I'd work on like seasonal camps. And then from there, one of the camps I worked for, they opened up a remote job in the head office. And then I got that job. So now I had a remote job and I can travel anywhere I want to go. Okay, so that's how I got, that's my story into traveling. But I was in a very, very low place, you know, and I knew then, like, my main priority was I need to travel. Because to me, travel is a form of therapy.
Yeah, and you figured it out. Because it's one thing to say, I want to travel, you know, because I told myself that a year and a half ago. But you got to have the funds to really do it. Like, you have to have some source of income, you know, and teaching is the perfect way to go. But it's not just something you could say, okay, I'm going to get my TESOL certificate.
Yeah.
I'm just use my bachelor. It's like, you got to actually love doing it because it's not easy doing what you do.
And you know what? Not many people know this, but my biggest fear is public speaking, which is crazy because I'm talking on a podcast right now. But like when I first started teaching in Poland, I would have a mini panic attack just getting up and speaking in front of the kids.
Rachel?
I swear to God. Like,
what do you think is going to happen to you?
I don't know. Do you know what? I know it's irrational. And that's why, like, over the past 3 years, like, that's one of the things I've been working on is, like, my confidence in speaking. And now, look, I'm on a podcast. So, look, improvement, growth.
I mean, I've had that issue, too, public speaking anxiety. It just feels like my lungs fill up with air and I can't really control myself, my breathing. But I feel like it's like kind of like trying to beat your thoughts. Like, okay, yeah, I'm already scared. I'm going to be scared.
This is the thing. It's like my brain would be empty. My brain's empty, but I'm sweating. I'm hyperventilating, but there's literally nothing in my head. So I'm like, why is my body so scared of this?
But, you know, it's better when, like, if somebody say, Rachel, come up on the stage and speak, and you just go up there, just don't think, just let your legs move, just go up there and just talk, versus when you have to sit there and, like, you're, like, the fourth or fifth person to speak, you're just sitting there, like, mellowing.
I mean, I still have a little bit of public speaking, but, you know, I've spoke at, like, protests and things, so, like, I'm definitely slowly facing my fear, you know, but I would like to eventually do, like, a TED Talk or something. I think that would be, a bucket list thing to do. But I just want to go back a little bit when I said about travel being therapy, because I don't want people to start running away from their problems and going on holiday, right? Because that's not what I'm talking about. I know it sounds like that's what I did, but I didn't. Like, obviously, travel in itself isn't therapy. It's not a replacement. It's not a replacement for, like, actual therapists or medication or actually doing the inner work. But, and this is a big but, it can be an incredibly therapeutic tool when you do it intentionally. And so what I mean by that is travel forces you into, like, constant self-awareness, because you're always in new environments, you're navigating new challenges, you're trying to, like, decode a new language, and you can't hide behind your routines or your job or your social circle, people you surround yourself with. So you're literally just stripped down to you, the raw you, when there's nothing else externally that you're reflecting back. That's where the magic happens, because travel gives you the space physically and mentally to actually process stuff. So when you get distance from your usual triggers, like in your hometown, and your usual patterns, it's like you zoom out and you get, like, an outside look on your life. And suddenly things that felt huge actually start to make sense. So for me, solo travel is like therapy in motion, you know? Like, I've told you about the moments when I'm sat on the back of a motorbike in Thailand, and it's like realizations just start to hit you. It's like things from previously, and you start thinking, like, oh, why did I react that way to something? Or, like, who am I without expectations of these people? It's like in those moments that those things hit you. And there's also kind of like a natural mindfulness that comes to travel as well, because you're constantly present. You're constantly figuring things out. You're noticing new details. You're meeting new people. And it pulls you out of, like, your comfort zone, out of your autopilot. Yeah, that's why I would say travel is therapeutic. I don't know if you can relate to that.
It is. So let me say this, like, when I was looking on TikTok, because I was trying to find some stories, you know, to see if I could relate to some things. And, like, what I kept seeing was just a bunch of people just talking about how fun it is to just travel, you know, travel makes your mental health so much better. And it's like, like when you travel for a while, it's a whole lot different. Like when you first, like let's say you're traveling for a week, right? Or just a few days. There's this dopamine rush that you get. Yeah. This is great. It's like your mind is trying to like figure everything out. You're in a new place. That's what I was trying to say that you said. You're in a new place, trying to figure everything out, process this. This person's trying to scam me. This new currency, or I'm in this new city, these state laws, policies, whatever. You don't really have time to be stressing or thinking about certain things. And I feel like for long-time travelers, you start to go through these layers of anxiety. And like for me, I had this thing called, it was called survivor's guilt. Now, like when I tell you like this right here, I've suffered from this for a long time, like in Virginia, Pittsburgh. So what is the meaning of survivor's guilt? Difficult and painful feelings caused by the fact that you are still alive after a situation in which other people died. There are times like when I'd say like when I was in Thailand where I was just sitting there just like, damn, like I get to enjoy life. I'm doing all this. And it's like I have a whole lot of people that's gone, or, you know, friends that are in jail that will never get to see this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's just things that, you know, things that you just have to accept.
Yeah, I get what you mean, 100%. Like, my mom, every time, like, we'll check in with each other, she's like, oh, you're living the life I always wanted. And I feel awful.
Really? It sounds like a compliment.
It is, but it makes me feel bad that, like, my mom never got to experience this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then at the same time, I also, there are times when I have to remind myself that I'm the first woman in my lineage who has the freedom to travel like I have.
Really? Why do you say that?
Well, because previously, like, I would need the permission from even my husband or my father, right? Up until the 1950s, a woman couldn't even buy a house or open a bank account in the UK. I would say I can't speak for the rest of the world, but, you know, until 1950s. So that my mum was born in 1964. She was probably the first in our lineage, but even not to the point that I have, you know, like the freedoms that I have as a woman now. Sometimes I have to remind myself of that. But just going on what you said about the anxiety, because that's one of the things that I noted that I wanted to talk about, because there is an anxiety when you travel long term. And it's not like the big kind of dramatic kind, but it is like that constant low level, like it lingers. It just kind of comes with being in like an unfamiliar place all the time, I think, you know, because you're trying to navigate your transport, figure out where to eat or language, or for me, remembering which side to look when I cross the road, because we drive on the right. So I'm like, I always just by habit look as if I'm in the UK, which is so.
I thought I was the only one. Like when I got to Thailand, I was thinking that, like, wait,
yeah,
you know, somebody would hit me coming from this side, not that side. So let me look this way.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even know that Thailand drive on the same side of the road as the UK, because there's not many countries. The majority of the world drives on the left, right? I didn't even realize until I think it was like my second week in Thailand when I hired a scooter and I had a motorbike and I was driving. I was like, hang on, this feels too familiar. And that's when I realized I was on my usual side of the road. But
yeah,
all of this stuff, like it can be a lot. Like even small, for some people, if you're a new traveler, even things like losing Wi-Fi or not knowing where your hostel is, like not being able to find directions, can spike stress when you're alone. Even when I traveled with my friend when we did Eastern Europe, she would stress me out because the slightest little thing and she'd get so stressed. I'm like, oh, like it's not that big of a deal. Like it's a very easy fix. You know, if we missed a train, she'd freak out. And I'm like, we'll just get the next train. So
yeah.
People's anxiety levels are different, you know?
Yeah. And I also think when you're a long-term traveler, you also kind of get used to being a little bit patient. Like, you know, being on stopovers or layovers for 10 to 13 hours, 8 hours, having to wait for a bus, you know, at an airport after being on a long flight. you learn to be a little bit more patient.
Yeah. And then you add in like culture shock. If you're going somewhere that's very, very different, like the sounds, the smells, the pace of everything, if you're not used to a busy city and you go to a busy city, like it can be overstimulating, especially if you are neurodivergent like me and you have sensory sensitivities. Like when I was in Hanoi in Vietnam, it was hell for me because it was so overstimulating. Like I'm the type of person who's very rarely in the house. Like I don't like just sitting around hanging in the house. I like to be out doing something, even if it's just walking in nature. Like I like to be out. But when I was in Hanoi, I was there for 2 weeks. I think there was only 5 days that I actually left my apartment, because every time I left, I don't know if anyone who's ever been to Hanoi is ridiculous. They've got no sidewalks. So you're literally just walking on the road and you've got bikes and cars passing you. There's no structure to the actual road system. I mean, I know a lot of countries are like this, but for me, I just felt like Vietnam was the worst I've ever seen it. And then there's the noise, the beep, 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 beep. Like in Thailand, they're so polite, they don't even beep. They don't even beep at each other. In Vietnam, beep, 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 beep. Like every half a second, there's a beep. And then you add in, when I went, the pollution was so bad. Like you could barely breathe outside. And then it was cold. So like all these things, I was just like, I hate it out here. And like I have like sound cancelling earbuds, which I use when I go places and it's too loud for me. Like I will put them in. They did nothing for me when I was in Hanoi, nothing at all. I remember actually doing a video recording because I went to post it on my TikTok because I'm like, guys, if you have ADHD or autism, don't come here.
So let me ask you, did Vietnam cause you to have a mental breakdown? Like at what point in your journeys as of recent in Asia, if so, did you have a mental breakdown to where it was just like, I don't care. I can't take it no more. Fuck it.
I don't think I've been at that point in a while. But I do have like moments where I'm pretty low. Okay. not to the point where I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. But definitely moments where I'm very, very sad, very sad. And I had that in Thailand. So after about almost 2 months of being in Asia, I think it was about a week where I was just crying every day. And I didn't really know what was wrong with me. I couldn't quite figure it out. I'm like, why do I feel like this? Because I'm good. And I think what it is, and it's always the same thing, it's the loneliness, which was the biggest point that I wanted to talk about today.
The loneliness. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the hardest to overcome. Loneliness.
Because the loneliness can lead to isolation. And I think that's what it was for me. But this is the thing. It's like like you said earlier, like people romanticize solo travel. And it can be. It can be empowering, but it's not like an eat, pray, love kind of thing. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes it really is. There are moments like that. But loneliness doesn't get talked about enough, because you can be surrounded by people. You can be meeting people every day. You can be meeting other travelers in your hostel, and you can still feel alone, especially if you are someone like me who is extroverted, or you crave deeper connections, because you meet people all the time, but it's like a different kind of energy. It's like fun and spontaneous. You know, it's nice meeting new people, but then everyone goes their own way the next day, and you might not ever see these people ever again. Most of the time, you probably won't.
Yeah. But then I think for me, part of loneliness, like when I was in Vietnam, I felt like it was more people there that didn't speak English than anywhere else I've been. Because people say, like in Thailand, oh, they don't speak English, but there's a fair amount of people that speak English. But when I hit Vietnam, there was even less people that spoke English. Like I found myself everywhere I went, you know, pulling out the translator. And I also feel like being there, I didn't really speak to too many people. Like I found myself waking up every morning and going all day without even saying a word. Like if somebody from America did not call me, I did not speak. And like when I, you know, go speak, I'd be
fuck. I'm so glad you said that, because do you know how many times I say this to my friends? I'm like, I haven't spoke in over a day. Like, not a single word has left my mouth. What the fuck? That's not normal. Like, and you know, anyone who knows me, I'm a yapper. I will talk. I wake up in the morning, eyes are open, I'm yapping. And some people hate me for that. Some people hate how much I talk. So when I'm traveling and I'm like, wow, I'm like, let me just quickly call someone.
Yeah, but you know what else? I got something else for you. Also, because you're dealing with people who, you know, can't really speak English or doesn't speak enough, you have to keep the conversation always at a kindergarten level or a surface level. You can never really have like a deep conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, especially trying to do it through translator, it never correlates the right way or hit at the right time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then it's like, even when you do meet people whose first language is English, or they do speak very good English as a second language, it's still very much surface level. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are people that I've met and, you know, I've spent a few days with them or whatever, and I've had deeper conversations with them than people in close to me in my life, you know? So occasionally I do meet people, and when I meet these people, it's almost like I was supposed to meet you. And sometimes I meet people and I'm like, I know I'm going to see you again. Most of the time I'm like, yo, I'm never going to see you again. But occasionally I meet someone and I'm like, I know we're going to cross paths again, or I know we're going to make the effort to meet again.
Nah, I feel 100%.
But just going back to that loneliness, like, it is part of the deal with solo travel. You have to get comfortable in solitude, which is freeing, but it is also confronting. But it's making sure that that loneliness, that solitude, doesn't turn into isolation, because that's when it's no good.
Because I remember thinking about it, and I said it in a video when I was in Vietnam. I remember going to the Na Ba Hills Mountain, and I was just sitting there like, I'm doing all this cool stuff. Like, I'm talking about just looking at the temples and everything, and they have like this little cart. It's kind of like in the ski resorts that take you all the way up to the mountain. And a, like, ski lift. I remember, what'd you say?
It's like a ski lift.
Yeah. And I remember being on there and I was just like, this is so cool. Like, but it's the fact that I'm by myself. It's like going to the movies by yourself and not really having nobody to speak to. Like, oh man, that was cool. You see that kick? It's like, I don't know. But one thing I will say, like, even being back here in my hometown, I now go out to eat by myself. I now spend a whole lot of time by myself. I don't hang out with people. It's like, I feel more comfortable like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I'm kind of comfortable within that loneliness.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's actually really nice. Like, for me, because I'm the type of person where when I'm with people, I want to make sure they're having a good time. And I'm so focused on making sure they're having a good time, I'm rarely paying myself to myself. What do I want to do? So when being solo traveling for so long, like, it's nice because now I don't need to think about other people. I know it sounds really selfish, but it's really nice to just have to think about yourself. And there are times when, like, you know, I'll meet my friends in a country and we'll travel, and, you know, I do sometimes travel with people and it's nice, but I know that long term, like, I would want to travel alone. But then at the same time, I have moments, like you said, where I'm in like the mountains, or I'm at a waterfall, or like I'm on this boat trip and I'm looking at all this amazing stuff around me. And I'm like, I just wish I had someone I could share that with.
Yeah. And I was also getting like burnouts from like expecting too much from people. Like, I'd look at people and go like, dang, like, why are they looking at me like that? Oh, it's like people don't really want to speak to me, you know, and I get pissed off about it. And just thinking about it, like, my homie Flame, he was in one of the previous podcast episodes, not episodes, in one of the bonus clips. He was telling me, like, the people in Okinawa, like, it's not that, like, the people are racist or anything like that. It's just, like, people are busy. You know, they work a whole lot more than we do because, you know, of the currency, you know, at the rate of money that they make. You know, they work a lot. They're overworked and they have kids and these people have a life. So I had to think to myself, why am I expecting so much from these people when back home I walk past people and they never say anything to me, and I don't say anything to them. So why am I expecting so much from these people? You know what I mean? It's kind of like I was damaging my own mental health for no reason, you know, expecting so much.
Yeah, that's a good reflection.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good reflection. Yeah, I like that. But you're right about the burnout. You're so right, because burnout's real. And like you said earlier, when you first start traveling and it's new and you get the dopamine, you get the adrenaline rush, you want to see and do everything. You know, you want to go every temple, you want to see every waterfall, you want to go every restaurant, and you actually forget that you're still human. Like, you're not on vacation. This is your life. So for me, burnout usually hits when I've been on the move too long. I'm living out of a suitcase. I'm living out of a backpack. I lived out of a backpack for 2 years. I only switched to a suitcase this year. But, you know, you're living out of a backpack. You're changing beds every few days. You're in a new environment. I mean, anyone listening to this, right? You go, a lot of people can probably relate to this. Not everyone. But when you go to a new place and you're staying in a hotel or you're staying at someone's house and you're in a new environment to sleep in, it's like your body can't fully rest because your body is in an unfamiliar environment. You know, it's like, it's nature. It's like evolution. All animals are the same. If you're not in an environment that you know is safe, you're not going to be able to sleep as deeply. So when you're moving all the time, you're moving beds and moving environments, especially if you're in a hostel room and you're sharing a room with other people, like, your body's not going to be able to fully relax, right? So you're not going to be fully resting. And then suddenly you'll just realize that you haven't had a proper rest in weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And as I got older, I'm not that old, but as I've got older and I've been traveling for longer, like, I've started to slow down. I went from moving week by week to spending a month to 2 months or longer in one place.
But for the stuff that me and you do, I feel like it's more mental. Like, we work ourselves, you know, mentally a whole lot more instead of physically.
Yeah.
So it's like a mental exhaustion.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And you just kind of have to remember that, like, staying in one place and having a little routine, even just sitting in bed and, like, binge watching Netflix all day for a day, like, that's okay because it's not wasted time. It's recharge time. Because the thing is when you're burnt out, you stop enjoying the very thing that you left home for. You can't fully enjoy what you're doing because you're burnt out and you're tired and you're irritated by things you wouldn't normally be irritated by.
I feel you, because I feel like, after going to all those different countries, when I got to Thailand, I kind of stopped posting on Instagram. And I kind of just used Thailand as like a place to where, you know, before I went to India, and that was something else. I kind of used Thailand as like a break. I didn't record that much with my camera. It was just like, all right, I'm not going to carry this camera around. I'm not going to worry about anything. I just want to just enjoy myself. You know, I want to be here in this moment for me, you know, and enjoy myself. And, you know, get enough sleep. And I felt like that helped me a lot.
Yeah.
I want to talk about mental breakdowns because I had a couple. I think, like, when I got to the Philippines.
Wait. Can you define for me a mental breakdown?
It's just for me personally, it's when it, like, I like to always feel like I have things figured out. I kind of like to have a chessboard mindset. Yeah, like strong control over, you know, my future. And when I feel like I can't figure things out anymore, there's no more moves left on the table, I just freak out. Like, that's my biggest fear, just not knowing what's about to happen, what's going on, not having anything. Yeah.
And what does a mental breakdown look like for you?
Listen, I'm going to tell you, Rachel. When I got to the Philippines, right? And I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I had just came back from Cebu, Philippines. And I got to Manila and I had already booked my Airbnb and everything. But my host, when I had got to Manila, she had forgot to send me the code to get into my room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I remember telling her.
Yeah. So it was already like 11:30 p.m. at night. So, you know, when I got to the place, the security guard, like, you know how the security guards, you know, in the Philippines are. They think they cops. So, like, they're going to ask you. Well, I don't know about you. They asked me a million questions, you know, why are you here? Who are you here for? Let me see this. Let me see that. And it's like, buddy, like, look, here's all the information. But to get to the point, I basically was stuck outside that night, like from 11 to 2, it was three, yeah, 11 p.m. to 3 in the morning. I was trying to figure that out. So the security guard didn't let me in. So I ended up looking on the internet. My phone's dying as well. I'm looking on the internet. I'm trying to find a hotel. I ended up finding a 2-star hotel. And I was just like, you know what? Okay, this hotel is going to have roaches, bed bugs, something. Like, it looked dirty. Like, so I said, all right, let me go there. So I get there. And on the internet, it said it had one more room left. When I got there, like, it was just like in like a neighborhood. Mind you, I don't know where I'm at. It looked scary as hell. And it was dark. And when I got there, the guy was like, yeah, we don't have any more rooms. I'm sorry. And at that point, you know, I think I said, fuck it. I don't care. Oh my God. Like, I just couldn't believe this was happening to me. And then, like, as this is happening and I'm freaking out, it started raining. I'm like, you can't be serious. I couldn't believe it. Like, I remember just sitting outside of this convenience store and there was this guy like 8 feet away from me laying down asleep. And I was like,
bruh, can I get in?
Like, yeah, like I could have swore 5 hours ago I was just in a high rise in a luxury Airbnb apartment. And then now I'm sitting here on the floor next to somebody, a homeless man.
Yeah. That the first lesson trial teaches you is things change. Things don't go to plan ever. If you have a trip planned and you complete that whole trip and there's not been any problems, no one's gotten sick, nothing's been cancelled, nothing's been lost, everything's been good, you're very, very lucky, because that is so rare.
That's rare. You got something coming your way. But it didn't stop there, Rachel. I ended up leaving and I was like, all right, let me find another hotel. And I ended up walking and I ended up finding myself in downtown Manila in the red light district, which that's where it became more annoying, because as I was walking to the hotel, there was a bunch of like trans lady boys or whatever whispering to me, big cock, big cock. And I was just like, man, I'm trying to find somewhere to stay. If you don't get out of my face.
Not now.
Yeah, like, would it? Not now, not ever, Rachel.
They should have been like, well, will it get me a bed for the night if I come with you?
Nah, hell nah. So I got to the hotel. I forget the currency, but they basically told me like $150. Mind you, at this time, it's about like 3:30 a.m. I think they told me like $150 just to stay until like 10 in the morning. And I was just like, they got to be out of their mind, because $150 is a lot of money in the Philippines. So I ended up going to this other hotel, and like the room that I was in just had roaches in it, roaches everywhere.
That happens a lot in the Philippines, though. Like, you can be in the nicest accommodation, there'll still be a roach in there.
Yeah. Yep.
Roaches are everywhere in the Philippines, man.
Hey, listen.
I was on like the 7th floor in Makati, and there was roaches in my room. It's like, what the fuck?
But we love the Philippines. We love the Philippines. Don't get it wrong. Yeah, it was just a horrible day.
Mm. One thing after another.
One thing after another. Mm-hmm. So for you, like, how would you define like a mental breakdown for you? And like, what country or city did you have one, and why?
My last like mental breakdown was when I had to move back from London. And that was a very, very difficult time for me. This is very deep, guys. So when I was a child, when I was a teen, I went through a lot. And I went through a period where I was self-harming. Because I'm suicidal, okay? I was at that point. So I prioritize my mental health now. My mental health comes before anything, because otherwise I will just... When I say I have a mental breakdown, that's what I mean. I'm back there. So to me, that's a mental breakdown. Like, I'm suicidal, I want to hurt myself, that kind of shit. I'm not suicidal, guys, okay? Just want to put that out there. But when I was living in London and I was like, you know, I have to get out of here. Like it was, everything was just too much. What done it for me of making that decision was I remember sitting on my bed and I was very, 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 very low point. I was very depressed. And I was calling a couple of my friends and none of my friends were picking up. And they're not horrible people, by the way. They're the best friends ever. But people can't always answer the phone, right? But in that moment, I'm like, I need to talk to someone. So I'm calling my friends, None of my friends picked up. And I'm like, shit, like I'm by myself. And a thought popped into my head to self-harm. And I was like, nah, I can't go back to that again. And in that moment, I was like, I need to leave. And within 2 days, I quit my job. I packed up my stuff. I left my relationship and I was gone in 2 days. Because I had to, for my mental health. You know, I had to get out of the environment that was making me sick. So to me, that's my mental breakdown. But that was over nearly 4 years ago now. I've done a lot of healing since then. I'm not suicidal. I actually love my life. I think actually when you've been at that point of your life, when you've been that low, it really makes you appreciate life more. And since then, I appreciate, I practice gratitude more. I love my life, even when it's not going well. Even now, when I'm in the one place I don't want to be in, I still love my life.
Yeah, so. No, that's good.
Yeah, that's so good. Not many people know this, and now everyone knows. But that's
good because you did it by yourself. You know what I mean? You made that decision by yourself, and that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's not like you just overcame the, you know, self-harm thing, but you did a lot. Like you up, moved, left the relationship. Mm-hmm. Like that's a mm-hmm. lot of things all at one time happening to you, like a whole life change.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the jobs got, like everything I'd created, I had to just leave. Like I even left because like I'd been living in London for 2 years and my dad drove down to London 6 hours to come and collect me. So we could only take one car worth of things. So I left so much stuff behind, TV, PS4, everything got left. Like so much got left, I'm not even telling you. But I would rather have left it and gone than have stayed where I was. It was not good for me to stay where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. And would you say, is there anything that you would change now?
No, I wouldn't change any. No. I would not change a single thing that's happened to me in my life, even the absolute horrible traumatic things. I wouldn't change them because then I might not be the person I am today.
It was a part of your character development.
Absolutely. It was a part of me becoming the person that I am now.
Now, that's amazing because, yeah, you definitely said, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm one of those people that I generally have no regrets, even if there's things where I'm like, shit, I shouldn't have done that. I don't regret it because it taught me something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no losses, just lessons. Rejection's just redirection. But
so, what you go was ahead. Gonna say?
I was gonna move on, but if you wanna carry on.
Yeah, I got one more thing. Like when I was in Vietnam, I didn't have a breakdown, but it was more like, I was kind of like just, I hit a low point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember just, I went out and I said, all right, you know, I was in Da Nang. Like, I was like, okay, let me just go to the beach. And as I'm walking, it was just like, it was just terrible. Like, it was guys on like Grab scooters just kept riding up to me saying, boom, boom.
Oh, I know.
And at that time, I was thinking they were saying boom, boom to me. And I'm like, are you serious? Do I look gay to you? Like, and I realized what they was, because there was no context that I'm telling me boom, boom. And then there was like this other guy rode up and he showed me a picture of like a naked chick or whatever. And I kind of got to a point to where it was just like, I just feel over-sexualized, like, you know, in Vietnam. Like,
wow.
I swear to God, like, because I was thinking in my head, like, okay, in the Philippines, they have the red district, okay, Thailand, you know, whatever. I just didn't see anything freaky going on in Vietnam because everything just seemed so politically correct. You know what I mean?
Really?
So when it hit nighttime, it was just a whole nother place.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I got burnt out from people just kept coming up to me. Sex, sex, sex. When I went to the club, sex, sex, sex. You want lady, you want lady. And I was just like, is that all people see me as? Is sex, sex, sex?
Or maybe it's just what brings in a lot of tourism.
Man, that's not what I was there for. And I think like when I had got home back to the Airbnb, I was just, I just couldn't even speak. Like I remember just trying to speak and it was just like, my battery was just on zero. I couldn't take it no more.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I forgot to touch on this because I meant to say this at first. I think what really made me jump and start like traveling, because I don't think you know how I got into traveling. I think I told you it was like the whole Colombian thing. I was a passport bro. Yeah, I was a passport bro. Yeah, but then after my second time going to Colombia, it was like, okay, I like the culture more than I like the other stuff. But what it was for me that really got me into traveling was, what got me into traveling is the fact that I loved my time being in Colombia and just enjoying the culture. And I think what also, you know, pushed me off the edge was my job. Did I ever tell you what I did, like before, you know, like the stuff I do now? I was working at this company and I basically managed like two different states for like the security or whatever. And it was just the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Like I had no personal life. I had no time for nobody. Like it was just, okay, I'm making all this money, but it's like, what does that mean if I can't spend it? You know, I'm getting 100 calls from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Then 6 p.m. starts second shift, then third shift. I'm getting called all around. It's like I don't have a life. So I think like the anxiety that threw me off the roof, you know, with that job pushed me into traveling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy because everyone's story would be so different, like of how people get into traveling. But it usually comes from wanting something more. Like wanting to explore more, wanting to experience more, wanting to learn more, I don't know, some people do it as running away. I have a lot of people ask me, like, when I've traveled, a lot of people are like, so what are you running from? I'm like, why do they always assume I'm running from something? Maybe I'm running towards something. People don't think about that.
It's kind of like, and I kind of like all the people that I've met when it comes to traveling. Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Like the people that you meet traveling are different, like the other travelers. Like you could tell it's really hard to go to a place and to have to refigure everything back out. You know what I'm saying? And to be by yourself, you know, and that loneliness, you know, the exhaustion we was talking about. It's hard to meet these people and hear other people's stories, like you said, are different. It's crazy.
I would like to give our listeners some coping strategies or tips. So I've got six. So the first one I have is keeping routines, right? And I know people think routine and travel are complete opposites because travel is freedom and spontaneity and no schedules, but humans need routine. It's part of how our brains and bodies feel safe. And when you're constantly moving, your nervous system is in overdrive. Having even the smallest bit of a routine can be quite grounding when everything else around you is changing. So for me, that means having four non-negotiables. So my four non-negotiables when I travel is sleep, movement, reflection, and connection. First one, sleep. That's the biggest one. Because if I don't get enough rest, everything else kind of unravels, and it's really not easy when you're, especially if you're staying in hostels or you're taking overnight buses, which I've done many times. I've slept in airports a number of times to save money. So you know, you can't always be having the best night's sleep, but I do try to prioritize it. So sleep's the first one. Second one, exercise. And I'm not talking about you have to go and do a full gym workout, although sometimes I do. When I'm looking at Airbnbs, if I can get an Airbnb that's in a building with a gym, that's perfect for me. So that is something that I look at when I'm choosing Airbnbs. But if same. I don't, it's fine because, sorry?
No, I said same. But I think outsourcing is just as good because you get to be in that environment.
Yeah. But if I don't have access to a gym, I actually travel with a yoga mat. I have a travel yoga mat. So I could do yoga anywhere, right? And yoga is... not just for movement, but also for mindfulness as well. It's very grounding. Like, I've done yoga on the beach, I've done yoga in the mountains. Even if I don't have the yoga mat, you can just pull out a blanket and do yoga. So that's what I do. I started running when I was in the Philippines. So, you know, running is another thing. It's another form of exercise that you can do without spending any money. But also even just walking. Just, I mean, you're probably going to walk a lot anyway when you're traveling. But to be honest, when I was in the Philippines, I didn't walk as much because it was hot as shit. Like, you step outside and you swell. So I just got motorbike everywhere. But sometimes I would get the bike to the park and just walk around the park. So
it was cold for me.
It was cold?
Yeah, and I got rained on every day.
Damn. Oh my God, it was so hot when I went. Yeah, but just like moving my body resets me. So sleep, exercise. My third one is reflection. So I journal. Not every day. But when I'm in those moments that we're talking about, where, you know, you're quite deflated or you're low, or you're feeling a bit isolated, reflection's a good time to do that because it's therapy on paper. So I might write about the day or what I'm feeling or what I'm grateful for or like the highlight of my day. And that just kind of keeps me connected to myself when I'm far away from everything that feels familiar. So meditation, I do. I'm going to put this in with reflection. I'm not the type of person who can sit in silence, by the way. As I already mentioned, I have ADHD. So sitting in silence is nothing for me. My brain's 100 miles an hour. But if you are...
gymnastics.
Exactly. So if you are a neurodivergent, the best thing I found with meditation is sound meditation. So what I do is I will sit somewhere. I actually did this a number of times when I was in Hanoi, when I told you that I was overstimulated. I'll go somewhere like a rooftop bar, for example, and just sit and close your eyes and just try and pick out as many sounds as you possibly can. You can hear a bird, you can hear a car horn, you can hear people talking, you can hear like music playing in the back, like all these things. And that is still meditation because it's bringing you to the present. So that is something that I do as well. And
I feel like for me personally, I just keep myself so busy to the point to where it's like, any negative thoughts just doesn't even have time or space in my mind. Like, I feel like now it's kind of creeping up on me because it's like, okay, I'm about to leave. So it's kind of like I'm packing up a lot of stuff. So it's like I'm not as busy as I was a few days ago. Mm. But I feel like as long as I'm busy and I have a whole lot of things on my plate, doesn't really bother me. Now, but Rachel's way is good too. I might have to try that out, Rachel.
Yeah, you should try it. Honestly, even if you sit on the beach and you just listen to the waves, amazing. So that's sleep, exercise, reflection. And then the fourth one is connection. So as I already said, I'm an extrovert and you don't want to get to a point where your solitude turns to isolation. So when I start to feel like that, that's when I know I need to empty my social battery. Because when my social battery is full, like I'm very restless. I'm like, I need to get this energy out. And so I prioritize socializing when I travel. So that can be group calls. That can be quite often I book bar crawls. I think that's one of the best ways to meet people. And the thing is, even if you don't drink, you can still go on the bar crawl, right? You don't have to be drinking. But if you do drink, a lot of bar crawls, especially in Europe, because they love drinking in Europe, they will do something like a 2-hour free bar included in your booking or something like that. I did one in Budapest, and Budapest was the best night out I've ever had in my life, even to this day. So bar crawls, cheap and a perfect way to meet people, other travelers and local people. Group tours is a good way to meet other travelers as well. Co-working spaces, events, hostels. There's been times when I usually stay in Airbnbs. It's very rare to stay in a hostel. But if I, like when I was in Thailand, I was craving some social interaction. So I booked a party hostel, which I later regretted, by the way, after 2 days. I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. But
it's a party hostel.
Yeah, I'm a party hostel.
What's that?
It's like hostels catered to like 18 to 35 year olds. So every night they'll have like they'll have like a beer pong competition, or they'll have a bar crawl, or they'll have like another drinking competition on, or being like just things where you drink.
It's like a travel sorority house.
Yeah, full parties. I've done a couple of these places before, you know, so it is fun. I'm a retired party girl, so occasionally I like to party still. So I like that environment. You will find a lot of people who are traveling in groups, they stay in hostels. They stay in party hostels because a lot of people, when they travel, all they want to do is drink and go to the beach, pretty much. But anyway, I'm going off topic. So I prioritize connection, even just small interactions, right? So even just chatting with, like in the Philippines, I met so many Filipinos that I would just, I still sometimes talk to now, that were just complete strangers. Like in the Philippines, one group of people, like a family, they invited me to a birthday party. It was like an hour out of Manila, and I traveled by motorbike to get there. And then when I got there, it was like a birthday party for the pool. They had a massive karaoke machine. It looked like something from an arcade machine. I've never seen a karaoke machine so big. And then they had this pig, this whole roasted pig. But like it was so cool to just like meet them and connect with them. And I was like, yes, I feel like I've drained my battery now and I can go back to solitude. So the routines. And so that was the four things I prioritized. The other things that I wrote down was talking about what we said later about slowing down. And this kind of relates to the routine a bit, because you create routine once you slow down. Travel, it doesn't have to be about constant movement. Sometimes the best moments actually happen when you stay in a place for a long time. Like in the Philippines, I was only supposed to be there 2 weeks, and I ended up there for 2 months, extending my visa. Slow down when needed. My third one is therapy. And I know not everyone can afford this, but I have a therapist that is completely virtual. And I've had her for 3 years now. She's amazing. Sometimes I'll just see her once a month. Sometimes I'll see her once a week. It really depends where I am. So when you were saying earlier about like my breakdowns, like when I get to a point where I'm heading that way, she's the first person I'm emailing. Like, can you get me in next week? So that is something that, you know, you guys might want to consider when you're traveling. If you do, a really, really good app is BetterHelp. They literally match you with a therapist that's good for you. It's fairly cheap, I think, for a therapist. It's fairly cheap. I think it's like £40 an hour or something.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And not only that, but like you have like a constant chat with them. So even when, if you don't have a session booked, you can still message them, and it's included in the price. So BetterHelp's a really good app to use if you do want a therapist on the road. But I also have a very, very good therapist. So I'm very happy to recommend her anytime. If anyone wants to, you can drop us a message on Instagram and I'll send that to you. But yeah, therapy always works. So go on.
Let me ask you this as a closing statement. Closing question.
Okay.
Do you think two lonely people can make each other happy?
Because there's a difference between, like, I feel like I'm a lonely person in that I spend a lot of my time alone. I figure things out by myself. Like, I don't really have anyone, like, I don't have anyone who I check in with daily. I don't have anyone who I check in with weekly. So yeah, I would consider myself a lonely person. But that doesn't mean that I'm lonely, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But for some people, like me, right? I'm always alone. I'm always by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, while traveling, right? There were some times like where I'd have company over and I'd just be like, man, I can't wait for them to leave. Just thinking that in my head, like just waiting to be alone like again. No, I do. They were cool. It's just I don't know. I feel like it's just a timer for me when it comes to people, certain people. So that's why I asked that question.
Yeah, I think two lonely people can make it work. 100%. Yeah. I think a lot of travelers are lonely. But I've not met many travelers who even are looking for a relationship, to be honest. Because I feel like a lot of travelers are kind of in the same mindset of like, well, I'm always on the move, so what's the point?
I mean, if you think about it, for a guy, it's like, every country you go to, especially for me, it was like I was being attacked by women left and right.
Yeah.
So it's like, you telling me you want me to cuff this chick? And it's like, I got 100 of them that want. That's the wrong mindset. And I feel like I came out of that.
Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm cool.
Okay, yeah.
But that's the mindset that a lot of guys have while traveling. And I can tell you, because almost every dude that I met out the country said it. But it's like, I feel like at the same time, you get burnt out by it. Like, I'm burnt out. Like, when mm-hmm. I hit Vietnam, it was just like, I can't take it no more.
It happens to all of us, I think, at some point. You get burnt out.
Yeah, because I can imagine you as a woman, they desire you.
In Asia? Not so much.
Really?
I'm a thicker woman.
What does that mean?
I'm curvy. I'm not what they consider the beauty standard in Asia. And that's the other thing. That's another thing I've learned traveling, slightly off topic, but you're as attractive as, it depends where you are on how attractive you are. I can be in one country and I'm like a 3 out of 10. I can be in another country and I'm an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It felt like everywhere in Asia I went, it was just like, I was just being attacked by women. Like, even in India. But my biggest issue with that was, like, a lot of the women smell like onions. So it was like, But you got...
You really hate onions, don't you, Naz? You really hate the smell of onions. Every time you smell onions, you just get flashbacks of being in India.
That's why I can't wait for this next episode.
PTSD.
Because I really want to hear, like, what the guy has to say about it. For me, it was a horrible experience. But at the same time, it felt like you ever just didn't like a country at all. But the last day was just like, well, damn, where was all this at? This is kind of fucked. You know what I mean? Now you leaving and India wasn't bad on my last day.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the other thing that's great about slowing down is like the Philippines, like after I'd been in Palawan for 2 weeks, I was fucking sick of the Philippines. I was sick of people coming, tuk, 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 fuck off. How many times do I need to say no to a tuk, tuk? And then like they'd come and like I'd get to the point where I've said no like 15 times to tuk, tuks and now I can't even be polite anymore. I'm just ignoring them because I'm sick of hearing tuk tuk. So that was pissing me off. The Wi-Fi was pissing me off because I couldn't work. And I was like, get me out of the Philippines. But then when I got back to the whole thing happened with the doctor that I spoke about in the previous episode. So I ended up staying in the Philippines longer. And I actually ended up loving it. After being there for 2 months, it was my favorite. So I gotta give it a chance.
Yeah, you got to give it a chance, yeah. I like Cebu more. Cebu, to me, like, I could literally live there. It was an experience. And I was only there for 3 days.
Wow.
I love but then, Cebu.
That's the other thing. And then on the flip side, you were there 3 days and you loved it. But if you were there for a month, you might end up hating it.
Probably. But for Maybe. Now, I love it. I loved it. Like, Manila, I ain't like it. Like, there's so many things I did not like about Manila. And it's no shade, but it's just... Like I said, the over-sexualization, like, it's just too much, you know? And, like, going out to the bar, it's just, like, I don't know. I just don't like it. It's too much. You have any closing statements?
Ooh, closing statements. Yeah, I do have a closing statement for one. So, my closing statement, when you are traveling long term, when you're on the road for a long time, is too sick or overstimulated. I remind myself that this is temporary. Travel's full of extremes and stress. And one day you're on top of a mountain thinking this is the best day of my life. And then the next day you're crying in a bus station because a Vietnamese granny stole your phone in a bathroom. So both moments are real and both pass. So it's just a reminder to keep grounded. Highs are amazing, but they don't last forever. Just the same as the lows. Just got to ride it out. Yeah. Any closing statements from you, Naz?
I just want to tell people to just live life the way you want to live it. Don't care about what no one else says or, you know, how they feel. It doesn't matter. Like, being in America, you know, I always felt like my life should have been like this. I should have this, have that. Going to Asia, I'm learning that people are telling them the complete opposite, that they need to live their life like this and do that. And it's totally opposite from America. So it's like, I'm now having these perspectives of, I need to just do what I want and not just what other people want, because over here, they're saying it's the right thing. Here, they're saying it's wrong. Then back over here, it's right. It's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, I'm going to live my life. We don't really have that much time on this earth. So it's like, if life is currency, I'm going to spend it the way I want. You know what I mean?
I like that. Life is currency. Spend it the way you want.
Yeah, that was a bar.
That was good. That was good. Life's the currency. Spend it how you want.
Well, should we end it like that, Rachel? I'm
gonna end it like that.
Damn, that was a horrible American accent.
Sorry, it's not always perfect. Sometimes I'm really good at the American accent, and people have asked me while I'm traveling, "Are you American?" I'm like, wow.
This is the bad take podcast. This is the bad take. This is the bad take podcast.